Good evening, everyone. This is Matthew West, and this is the Ontology Summit meeting when we're looking at Synthesis 1, is the title of the session, and I'd like to welcome you all to this. So hopefully we will be able to have some constructive discussion about how we take things forward. Next slide, please, slide 2. So this says this is our agenda for today. I'm going to do an opening. Michael can't be with us, so I'll be presenting slides on behalf of both of us about where he and I think we are. And then we'll be going through the tracks, and I've seen the slides, and it's good to see what you're drawing out of what's happened so far. Then we'll have the approach to the communique from Amanda and Fabian, and then how we're going to tackle the hackathon clinics, and hopefully some summary and wrap-up announcements. I think today it's probably going to be sensible to have discussion first at the end of track synthesis 1 and then after each of the following items, so the approach to the communique and the approach to the hackathon. So if you can hold your questions, and of course you will know the discipline of actually putting the questions on the chat board in any case. So please put your questions on the chat board, but then we'll discuss them in those sections, and we'll try and be fairly tight about how we do that. Okay, so slide 3, please. So Mike and I had a brief exchange about this, and were both slightly surprised that we had almost exactly the same opinion. We all know that we do evaluation, but the evidence so far seems to be that we don't know how we do it. There's been a huge diversity in the presentations on what is nominally the same topic, and it seems to us that there's a lot of opportunity to make progress in a large number of areas, and that the challenge we face is focus on some things we can actually achieve in the time frame, as well as sketch out what eventual success will look like. So I think it's been very good for raising the topic up and shedding some light on it. Next slide, please, slide 4. Some challenges. There are a number of us, at least, who get asked to evaluate ontology research papers from time to time. And what do we expect when we read ontology papers? How can authors convince us that their ontology is well designed and correctly applied, and how do these criteria vary for different uses of ontologies? We do these things. We have a way of doing it, but it's unconscious knowledge rather than conscious knowledge. Slide 5, please. Reusability and shareability. We would probably all agree that reusability and shareability are good properties for an ontology to have. But how do we evaluate this? And there's been some relevance here in the discussions on upper ontologies and the semantic integration of ontologies on the Ontology Summit mailing list. And I think that's all we had here. Is next slide, if there is one? Oh, I think there is one more. Slide 6. Perhaps not.
No, I don't seem to have a slide 6.
Okay, then that makes life easier. So I thought maybe there was a summary or something. Okay, so that's the end of what I have to say. So if we can move on to track A and their presentation.
Okay, thank you, Matthew. This is Leo Oberst, and I'll be presenting, but Steve will add comments as needed, and we'll fend questions and so forth. In the interest of time, let's move to slide 2. What we're trying to do here is really to partition the space for ontology evaluation. So the range is from intrinsic to extrinsic. You can think of those as poles on some sort of scale. It's useful to partition these into three regions. We have clearer ideas, perhaps, about region 1 and region 3, intrinsic and extrinsic, with the intrinsic having really little or no domain knowledge being needed. Now, it's probably little rather than no, because there seems to be always domain knowledge to some extent needed, but there's less for intrinsic evaluation. And then extrinsic evaluation, the extreme is, of course, to consider the ontology as a black box to external requirements interactions. Think of shooting cosmic rays or queries at the ontology and seeing what the response is. Those are ways to gauge your requirements and let's say, the competency of your questions, if you have competency questions, but the answers and the granularity of the answers, whether they're sufficient or not, without really looking yet inside the box of the ontology. But the region two, which is the land of in-between, requires some domain knowledge and exploration of the ontology, and then perhaps even beyond the ontology to other sources, imports that are used, et cetera. So the next slide is three. Region one, which is intrinsic evaluation, the ideal is that it doesn't depend on at all on knowledge of the domain being modeled. So the focus is typically on mathematical and logical properties. You can think of that as ranging from, you know, graph theoretic properties like connectivity, notions of logical consistency, model theoretic interpretation issues, perhaps even intermodularity mappings and preservation, structural preservations, etc. And, of course, some example metrics that you can look at beyond, you know, consistency and some of the logical properties are things such as branching factor, density, counts of the ontology constructs, averages, depth, if you will, breadth, etc., relative density. These are notions that are basically structural and are kind of amenable to counting and simple computations in general, but not always. And some of the example meta properties that may be involved will be things such as transitivity, symmetry, reflexivity, equivalence. These really apply to almost all ontologies, and there are things that you can gauge. And so the next slide, we'll jump to region three. This is slide four, extrinsic evaluation. So we have a little icon. So if you went back to slide three, you see this kind of scaffolding structure. I think it's maybe an oil well from or something comparable from beneath. And now on slide four, you see that we have kind of an icon that's a rock, if you will, or perhaps even an asteroid, but it's interesting because it has an outlet in it, if you will, where you can plug things in. So these are, we're trying to iconicize the regions. So region three, extrinsic evaluation, the structure and design of the ontology is opaque to the tester. Now, that, of course, that's the extreme. Evaluation is determined by the correctness of answers to various interrogations of the model or, you know, prospectively other kinds of interactions could be included here. Slide five, the interesting slide and the interesting region, of course, is the land of in-between. It's where evaluation requires at least some understanding of the domain, and often quite a lot. So you really, for example, want to determine that your modeling constructs, everything from first order logic to the constructs in your knowledge representation language, really aligns with reality. Meta properties may come into play here, such as, for example, rigidity and others, that are usually addressed by philosophical and ontological analysis, such as identity, unity, and of course many of these come from different, if you will, contributing domains like metaphysics, philosophical ontology, and if you will, philosophy of language, formal semantics. And so, for example, these sometimes can be used to gauge the quality of your subclass or taxonomic backbone and other structural aspects of the ontology by really looking at the properties you could assign and should assign to individual classes or constructs and then comparing them. For example, a child to a parent, you know, a teenager is probably not a subclass of a person, for example, because of maybe rigidity properties. For the purposes of developing reasonable expectations of these evaluation approaches, really the challenge here in the land of in-between is to, you know, figure out what falls in this realm. It's easier to decide on the intrinsic and extrinsic simply because you can focus on the poles, but most of the interesting stuff is in between. So you can think of the whole region, region 1, 2, and 3, as kind of a spectrum or perhaps a peninsula leading to the sea, but or an island, where within region 2, you have to have some domain knowledge, and you have to really explore the ontology that's being evaluated. So the, a little icon associated with that is the kind of world within the world, if you will, the world within the ball. Okay, so next slide is 6, why 3 regions? Region 1, purely extrinsic, intrinsic rather, is amenable, highly amenable to automation, and thus to scaling, perhaps even to many ontologies with very large sizes. This is not to say that, you know, the other regions that partition this evaluation space do not have criteria properties that could be automated, more automatable eventually, perhaps with more effort. Region 3, purely extrinsic evaluation, we're focusing on the pole, if you will, the polar view, which says that no ability whatsoever is needed to peer inside the model. So it depends entirely when you do your evaluation on the model behavior as stimulation by external interactions, such as querying, for example, or requests for, you know, complex knowledge that could require reasoning, so enhanced queries. Intrinsic evaluation criteria is sometimes can be considered really as extensions of intrinsic criteria, perhaps with additional relational arguments. The argument has been made that you get more and more into domain and requirement specific notions, and some of the intrinsic evaluation criteria may just simply be expanded to kind of provide additional context. Slide 7, in our own track A, we considered the intrinsic evaluation tools with two presentations so far, the OOPS tool, which really reports on, you know, ODL modeling practices. So, if you will, it's looking at the knowledge representation language of OWL primarily and reflecting the structural regularities or irregularities it sees. And onto QA, which is used to develop metrics for any ontology based mostly on structural properties and instance populations. So Maria and Samir are our speakers for that, and we are hoping that they can continue to participate in the ontology summit. Next slide, slide 8, we're getting there. Region 2, the O-Quare, if you will, framework, we consider as really being kind of in the land of in-between tools. So that was described by Ostrid. And the team itself has stated their desire to really better distinguish between these dependent and independent metrics, so these two categories of metrics that they've identified. And, of course, not represented in the Ontology Summit, but known by probably everyone here, is like the OntoClean methodology of Nicola Guarino and Chris Weldy. We actually hope to have Nicola present, but there's been conflicts. But we wanted to include that because, really, OntoClean draws upon not only domain knowledge, but this meta-domain knowledge, if you will, ontological analysis of properties when evaluating, for example, subsumption and the taxonomic structure of an ontology. Slide 9. Here are the three regions. And, you know, what we're thinking is the Ontology Summit, we're really going through all three regions. We may not end up with the extrinsic, so it may be, not a directed journey. It may be, in fact, that we go back and forth. And, of course, the wizard ontologist in there is trying to guide us, to show us the way. But we want to emphasize that the middle region here, the land of in-between, is really the where most of the evaluation criteria and discovery and questions arise. And so you can think of that as really being between a rock and a hard place in terms of the icons. The last slide, then, in conclusions. Mathematical, logical, structural integrity, properties, consistency, for example, they are kinds of evaluation that can be performed really even in a domain context-free setting. For all intents and purposes, because they're addressing the way that you express the content primarily and the way your content is structured. Entailments, theories, sub-theories, notions such as interpretability, reducibility, are also a few of other properties that could be examined, for example. The use of ontological analysis, we think, derived from, you know, some of these disciplines that we... some of these formal disciplines that we draw on within ontological engineering, we can use their notions and their analysis methods. So we think it's the goal of the summit really to define the framework in which these examinations can take place, really with the idea that the larger goal is defining the discipline of ontological engineering itself. Thank you all. Steve, did you want to make any comments?
No, I think you covered everything we agreed to say, so that's good.
Okay, thank you.
Now move on to Terry and Todd with the synthesis from Track B.
Hi, this is Terry Longstreth. I guess you can move on to slide 2. That just gives our title. So I'm really just going to do a little bit of a history of what we did in our first panel session in January. We started out with Todd and Hans talking about what the black box model really meant. And particularly from Hans' perspective, how we needed to establish some ground rules with respect to what he calls dimensionality. In other words, the fact that you have to find. Let me start over here. that the idea of an evaluation scope is a prerequisite for determining whether you have a valid set of evaluation processes. So the scope elements that he talked about, including the context and purpose, the life cycle phases, and the application domains, all of those areas may impact the level of evaluation that you're doing. So let's go on to slide 3. And then Mary Balboni contributed her analogy of software development. And I personally come from a software development background, so this resonated with me. The idea that a test case is used and can be repeated at various points in the development life cycle, that's an idea that I think we might want to include in our eventual model for extrinsic evaluation. The idea that there's test data in a software environment, that's where I come a cropper, because I'm not quite sure how one would codify the test data for repeatability. And then the other thing that Mary talked about was the black box, the idea of fault seeding, where there are flaws intentionally embedded, and this probably gets into Leo's middle ground, what he calls the part that's neither intrinsic nor extrinsic, or that bridges the gap between them, that in that arena with fault seeding, you would have to understand the ontology well enough to inject faults into it. The testing itself, of course, would still be outside, external, to try and identify those faults through probes. Okay, and then Megan Katsumi, and this may be another middle ground arena, and I'm not sure how really to distinguish the middle ground from the extrinsics in this case, because the idea that one way to test an ontology is by running it against another representation of the same ontology. She called it a model, but that's really, to me, just a different representation of the same set of concepts. So, but I think that's a valuable insight. Next page. Page 4. Right. Okay. So here's where we got to. That the purpose of an ontology has to be defined before you can test it. Before you can evaluate it, that by knowing why you have an ontology in the system, only then can you decide what the external behaviors are that you expect to get from probing that ontology. So, the idea that an ontology may evolve over the life cycle of a development project, and in fact into the operational or even archiving of an enterprise, those ideas have to be incorporated into your evaluation plans so that you can know that when you evaluate the ontology in development, you may not be providing an appropriate level of value for that ontology for an operational environment. So the idea that you need to know what part of the life cycle you're in to know how to evaluate it, and you have to be sure that when you change life cycles, you have your evaluation criteria established for that new life cycle, new part of the life cycle. Okay. So I talk about a utility function. This is an idea from economics. It's an analogy that when one has established the value of something, but that one establishes the value of something by determining how useful it is. So if you know that you have an ontology that needs to have a certain degree of utility, usefulness inside your environment, then you know how to evaluate it for fulfilling that utility function. The utility function, you can think of it as a set of related requirements that go to saying what the ontology is in the system for. Okay. Then the idea that the enterprise life cycle and the ontology life cycle may be different, and you need to cross hatch or cross figure the way the ontology life cycle is related to the enterprise itself, so that if the enterprise is in a Christmas rush part of its life cycle, the ontology may have to be evaluated as supporting that particular part of the enterprise. Okay, and then finally the idea that the architectural models, and this was one that Todd and I discussed and never really had a good answer for. And I'm not even sure that I'm using the right term here. I know, Leo, you wrote a book on this, on ontology architectures, but I think that also has an influence. I'm just not sure where it lies. Go to number five, please. I just wanted to give a tip of my hat to Mike Bennett, because he has it was his set of charts that clarified to me the idea that there really are more than one instance or more than one patient of an ontology in a system, and sometimes the idea that the conceptual model is used in development, but it may in turn may or may not contribute that much to the operational ontology. Clearly, they have to be related, though. And then the other thing is, I really have to go back and look at the others, because the purpose of this whole session today, I thought, was to figure out how all of the tracks might converge, and Leo's presentation gave a good idea of that. And I hope I'm in philosophy too. Okay, I think that's all. I have some other charts in here, but they're not particularly important. They're just talking about the go on, show them 6 and 7, Peter. I think they're This was just the information gathering phase from the first session, where we asked people for keywords that might help identify extrinsic evaluation criteria. So that's all. Todd, have you got anything to say on this?
No.
Nothing? Okay. But I guess that's where we stand.
Okay, thank you very much, Terry. Okay, next we have track C synthesis from myself and Mike Bennett, which Mike is going to present on our behalf.
Thanks. Sorry. Great. So I've just done a fairly basic summary of what were the things we talked about, and then some talking points about where I think this is leading in terms of ontology development methodologies for one of the two kinds of use cases identified for ontologies, which is integrating ontologies, or essentially conceptual models. Slide 2, please. So this is really just a reiteration of the track background, just to reinforce the point that the aim in having a good methodology is that there's a couple of approaches you can take in ensuring the quality of something. One is to see how you did, and the other is to have a formal methodology that you can bake into your development process so that you can actually repeatedly ensure that the relevant measures are applied as part of the development of ontologies. in order to ensure that they're the quality of them going forward. And so for that, we needed to look at the two different scenarios that have been mentioned a couple of times now. So the ontology is a formal conceptual model, whether that's being used to inform development of an operational ontology or to development of conventional data models as part of the quality assurance of a conventional data intensive application, where the ontology is the conceptual model for the data, for integration and so on. And the other, of course, is ensuring the quality of an ontology based application in a semantic technology scenario. Next slide, please. Slide three. It's not showing here. So basically, taking those two scenarios in mind, what we basically have is that we've had one session so far, which is for methodologies for integrating ontologies, so ontologies used in integration and conceptual models, and the other one, which is to come on reasoning ontologies. Next slide, please. Slide four, five even. My screen's slow catching up. So on this first session, then, we had four presenters. We had Professor Barry Smith from the University of Buffalo, who talked about ontological realism as a strategy for integrating ontologies. We had Chris Partridge from Burrow Solutions talking about top ontology architecture and some of the methodological choices in those. We had Anatoly Levenchuk from TechMS Lab, who gave us a deep dive into the ISO 15926 reference data engineering methodology and some ways of describing methodological components around that. And we had myself, Mike Bennett from the EDM Council, talking about quality considerations for an industry standard ontology based on some current work in the financial industry business information ontology. So next slide, slide six, please. So I've tried to draw out what I hope are the key points that I drew out of each of these presentations, and then I've expanded those a little bit more in the slides that follow, and I'll try and summarize those as briefly as I can before drawing it together into some possible lessons for developing the kind of formal ontologies that we need. So I think firstly, Barry Smith made some interesting points about how easy it is to create semantic silos and how for the kind of ontologies we're talking about here, what's needed is the knowledge representation type of approach and looking at the kind of considerations behind the meanings of terms and how to, duly reference terms and so on. And some thoughts about developing a methodology around that kind of requirement and some reflections on criteria for selecting upper ontologies or ontology lattices around such an ontology. Chris Partridge talked some very similar points, the kind of, for want of a better word, meta-ontological choices, the choices you have to make around your methodologies, what upper ontologies to use, and how to build that into a methodology again. Anatoly Levenchuk talked about the whole science of defining formal methods and developing methodologies and whether to extend some existing methodologies that are focused on data models or whether it's something completely different from that, and some of the language for defining methodologies. And then Mike Bennett and me talked about a little bit on why a methodology is important, the balance between the reliance on smart individuals in development versus reliance on methodology for repeatable engineering of things, focus particularly on an ontology as a conceptual model or computationally independent model, and some open questions that we're dealing with at the moment on which kind of measures apply to those. And some of the questions around the sort of ontological precision and the quality measures that exist for that, and which of those to apply to conceptual ontologies versus the business need to be able to present ontology content to business stakeholders as part of the development process. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second as well. So that was, I think, the broad kind of key points I wanted to draw out from those. I'm sure there are many other points that others took from that, but these are the points I want to try and draw together. I'll dive a little bit deeper into each presentation, but I'm conscious of time. So slide 7, please. So Barry Smith talks about ontological realism, took very much a knowledge representation approach, so looking at the common language and how to basically avoid the sort of creation of semantic silos. You know, if you just simply have lots of ontologies with terms in them, there's nothing to ensure reuse and consistency and good levels of abstraction, and those are really the kind of things that we need from a knowledge representation point of view to have a good high-level ontology that you can use for integration and conceptual modeling and so on. And he developed that into a kind of evidence-based ontology development approach, looked at the different ways to identify which ontologies that you might look at would have terms that are grounded in some kind of reality. Do you look at a particular authority as the source of the meaning of something, or terms that are used in lots of ontologies, and so you've got a kind of a voting kind of effect of how many terms are used widely enough that they're appropriate ones to select and so on. And I think what was an important point, terms and meanings that are grounded in textbook realities or published meanings and concepts by communities of practice, publicly accessible reference to the meanings of terms being an important consideration when considering what ontologies to use and what terms to use. And of course, the question then would be how to build a methodology around that, how to ensure that given this kind of ontology use case, how do you define those criteria and ensure that those are applied in the development of that kind of ontology. And then also a look at the available upper ontologies, the BFO ontology and how that relates to some of the others like Dolce and so on, and some nice kind of tabular views of how these different, you know, this is things like continuant versus occurrent and those kinds of upper ontology terms, and again how to pull that together into some kind of methodology. So those are the key points I drew from that presentation. There's a lot more, of course, and I hope I've done justice to Barry's presentation there. Similarly, on slide 8, so Chris Partridge talked about some very similar areas, made the point that for a larger project, you need to have some kind of architecture, you need to have all this kind of formal framework in place, and again, the emphasis on conceptual models. So this, again, could be in the context where that conceptual model is being used as part of a larger data-intensive project for development of conventional things. Also, of course, it can be of use in a operational semantic web ontology. So the context of what he was talking about was a large-ish ontology project where a lot of terms need to be mapped and understood and so on. And he went through some what are really little snippets of methodology. So we're starting to see here how we can start to build formal methods around this. So you have the classic buy versus build type of considerations that you have in any development project, applying that thinking to ontologies. You know, when do you use an existing published ontology? When do you build your own? That same question applies both in the selection of top-level ontologies and in the use or reuse of existing domain ontologies in building out your own large conceptual ontology. And so he developed that into a set of meta-ontological choices. Some of those existing ontologies might have different ontological commitments that are not compatible with others. You know, you've got the classic three-dimensional versus four-dimensional world. You've got the the different kinds of top-level domain partitions that we saw in the previous presentation, which of those choices depend on which other choices, and again, how you make those choices explicit and build that into a methodology. So I think those are some of the key points from Chris's talk. Next slide, slide 9. Anatoly Levchuk gave us a deep dive into the ISO 15926 material. The context on this is systems federation using ontologies in the broader engineering of the system. So a focus more on conventional technology and the use of ontology within the development framework for that as part of a methodology for developing and integrating reference data and so on. He gave us some practical experience. We had a look at the tools and the techniques that they used and so on. And there's a particular technique called situational method engineering, where you try and develop the detailed method tailored to each specific project, and the question was how to take that existing published approach to methodology development and apply it to ontology. So there's a standard called ISO 24744, which is a standard for describing a method. He showed us the way of using that standard way of describing a method to describe the methodology of ISO 15926. Looked at what are the components of the method, you know, what is the method made of, so the classic, you know, people, process, products and so on, organization and language and so on, and left us with the question of is the methodology for engineering ontologies a separate new kind of methodology, or is an extension of some software engineering approach, and would the ontology development method be an extension of existing methods for reference data, or would it be something completely different? Next slide, please. Slide 10. So then my talk on the quality requirements for an industry standard ontology, the FIBO, Financial Industry Business Ontology, being the example that I used. I talked about the importance of methodology. We've covered that already, I think. Defined the ontology in the context of it being a computationally independent model or conceptual model, regardless of whether it's then used to derive operational ontologies using reasoners and Sparkle queries and so on, or whether it's used for onward engineering into conventional data and integration and so on, looked at what the quality requirements are for all computationally independent models, so the well-established requirements for business requirement statements, use cases and so on, and also for a standard itself, because some of the requirements for a standard that has to cover multiple use cases will be rather broader and more complex than the basic requirements for even a computationally independent model for one application, for example. So again, thought about the requirements for building the ontology, the methodological requirements for that. It should be implementation independent. The feedback I got was I underemphasized the importance of business validation. This was so fundamental to the FIBO effort that it was always intended to be a business ontology owned by business stakeholders. And so one requirement, which I've framed as a quality requirement for the ontology itself, is that it should be possible to present it to the business. And notice the sad lack of tools for doing that, of course. But that's one of the, you know, if you can't present it to business and if business can't validate it, then it ain't any use as a conceptual model. So look at some of our experience of that. One interesting piece of experience is that a lot of people looking at something the moment it's in OWL start to look at it as if it's an application-ready operational ontology. And of course, many things are done differently, particularly some compromises that are taken in order to provide business readability. And so there's a bit of confusion when people see an OWL rendition of a conceptual ontology for the first time. And maybe a lot of our requirements that could be applied back to it without compromising its ability to be a conceptual model. So really I just outlined some of the open questions that are being addressed now within the 5.0 universe about the methodology requirements, like how to deal with the meaningfulness of terms. They don't become meaningful just because they're in OWL, so what does make them meaningful, the abstraction, the grounding, the sort of stuff that we touched on earlier, and whether and where to apply some of the different tools and techniques we've seen in the other tracks on this summit. So basically pulling all that together then, next slide, observations of feedback, slide 11. So in this first session of our two sessions, we looked specifically at the quality considerations for ontologies that are used explicitly as conceptual models rather than applications, whether those are conceptual models for ontology application development, for integration of sources of information in different data silos in conventional technology, or for integration more generally. And even here, even within that context, I think there are a couple of perspectives. So there's the conceptual model as part of the systems development methodology. So here, you wouldn't really be developing a methodology for developing the ontology. You'd be looking at the ontology as part of the development framework for a broader system, the ontology as the business conceptual model component of the development of some larger system. And so you'd be looking at a methodology of which the ontology would be a part, versus the methodological considerations for developing the ontology itself. So and I think we had a lot of material so far really focused on the methodology for developing an ontology which would then be a suitable conceptual model. We found a lot of quality measures in the different tracks on this summit that can be applicable to this kind of ontology development, and some open questions about which of them to apply to a conceptual model. You presumably want it to be able to be reasoned over to ensure that it's complete and correct, but you don't want to apply the application requirements of a reasoner because those are application requirements, not part of a conceptual model. So there's those kind of open questions. There's a lot of interesting stuff that we had in these slides about what choices you made in the selection of ontologies, both for upper ontologies and for reuse of existing published ontologies, how to understand and compare the underlying ontological commitments, both in terms of the grounding of terms and meanings and in terms of what broader philosophy is required for particular ontologies and the interdependencies between those, as we saw. So those are some of the points that we drew together. Last slide, slide 12, please. So if I could summarize what I think we had so far, it feels like we have a kind of a kaleidoscope view. Looking back over all of these presentations, we see lots of pieces of a possible methodology, lots of interesting process flows between, for example, the build versus buy choices and the choices and things that have been made at different stages. So we've got little pieces of methodology. I don't think we yet have the whole methodology. Well, we don't, and I think we've established that there may not be a one-size-fits-all, but a whole set of methodological choices to be made in order to have a broader framework in which to define the different methodologies that are, define the different paths that you need to go through to ensure quality in ontologies in these different contexts. And I think between all the presenters that we had, quite a wide range of methodological elements, particularly in the use of upper ontologies and in terms of the grounding and quality of meanings in existing published ontologies. So I think each of the choices that have been described need to be fitted together into some broader process flow, which would be different for each of the contexts in which ontologies are to be used. It's not going to be one process fits all. And I think another thing we got some feedback was that in the middle of all this and all the different choices of what tools and techniques to apply and so on, we lost the opportunity to really emphasize the importance of business subject matter expert validation as part of the methodology, something I was guilty of thinking was so fundamental that I forgot to mention it. And it's interesting, perhaps that's why there are so few tools that provide a good me-facing view of what's in an ontology, is that it's something that we need to bake into the ontology in the first place, so that we know that the business-facing terms, the conceptual terms that we want to use for integration and so on, are based on and accurately reflect the business domain knowledge about those things. So I think in conclusion, we validate the need for a formal ontology, and we identified a lot of the pieces, and there's work to be done. That's it. Okay.
Thank you very much, Michael. Can we move on to track D and Michael Denny and Peter Yim, please?
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Mike Denny, and I'll give a brief summary of track D activity. The panel papers that were in session five including their abstracts, are available on the conference call page out on the Ansalog wiki. And so I would refer you to those for, there were four papers, Michael Gruninger's one on Collare, Gavin Matthews on large-scale ontology evaluation, or at least the sense of assessment of quality, and Gene Holm on the use of evaluating open data resources at data.gov. What I'm going to spend most of my time talking about is the work still in process within Track D, which includes the survey, evaluation capabilities within software environments, and the hackathon and clinic events that are being developed and scheduled at this point. And actually, Mike Dean will cover that later topic in a subsequent presentation today. So what I'll be talking about is strictly the development of the survey. In the session five, we did go through what was the current state of planning for that. It was pointed out that we had reviewed the current set of evaluation factors that had been identified in Track A through C, somewhat, by just reading through the scripts of chat and through presentations and summaries. So it wasn't necessarily a systematic or exhaustive review, but it was certainly an attempt to try to highlight the main factors that had been identified. And, in spite of what Leah was pointing out earlier today, I didn't make any distinction between intrinsic and extrinsic factors, as I believe that probably both kinds of factors appear in all phases of the life cycle. And I did indeed try to categorize the various evaluation factors in respect to whether they would be likely to appear as a consideration in the different life cycle phases. And to that end, I sort of arbitrarily partitioned life cycle into six or seven development phases. And then I tried to construct what I thought would be software-based capabilities that might be able to address each of the various evaluation factors that had been identified within that particular phase. So an evaluation factor might be identified, such as completeness, that might apply in all of the phases. And so there was some risk and indeed some intent to duplicate an evaluation factor in different phases as it might be addressed somewhat differently by the software in that particular phase. So if you're exploring the domain semantic content of ontologies that you might consider to either adopt. I mean, if you're just starting out and you have a problem, you might want to just whole hog adopt an ontology or set of ontologies that seems to answer your question, or you might adopt them as reuse for import into an ontology that you're going to build to extend or otherwise focus on your particular concerns, but use the existing products at hand. So there you're concerned about domain semantics. But when you get down to the validation phase, again, you're going to be concerned about domain semantics, and indeed you would have been concerned about it during the design phase as well. So, but from a different perspective in terms of the software. So in the exploration phase, software might be trying to build a spectrum or show a spectrum of ontologies and how that how their particular domain content compares either against some world view of content. But when you get down to a validation phase, then you're not interested at all in that wide spectrum of possibilities, but you're interested in the very specific semantics that are demanded by your application that you're putting the ontology to use in. So that might be a totally different software function to assist the user in that particular phase of ensuring quality or fitness of the ontology. So the software capabilities were organized across those six or seven phases, and were put out in the last session. And there has been some feedback, and indeed, that was the objective, was to get feedback on that set of capabilities, which are essentially candidate capabilities that we would like to include in the survey to seed the process of identifying or describing software capabilities by various software providers. So it's looked as an extensible list, but hopefully makes it easier than starting from scratch and free text trying to explain how your particular software addresses some intrinsic factor of consistency. So the feedback has been helpful, and that list is in the process of being revised and expanded. One thing though that came from that was that there were some suggestions in that feedback for various capabilities of ontology software, that I wasn't convinced actually addressed very directly the notion of ontology, quality, and fitness. Not everything about building an ontology relates directly to ontology, quality, and fitness, I don't think. So, for example, one of the suggestions was that there should be something in there about visual building devices. I mean, how does the software help me visually construct an ontology? That might contribute to ontology quality, but it might do just the reverse and restrict the ontology's capabilities and complexities in a way that diminishes the utility of that ontology. I'm choosing to not include aspects of ontology development represented in supported in software environments that doesn't sort of clearly and directly address or support the control of ontology quality and fitness. Now, that's certainly open to discussion, and if we want a broader sense of surveying ontology software, then, you know, we can certainly reconsider that position. We're at that state in terms of the list of candidate software capabilities. We have also had some additional initial planning on the ontology in terms of how to implement it. That work is in process, and there will be a meeting tomorrow to hopefully, and now I'm on slide 3. Sorry, I wasn't very direct about that. So, Peter, we'll be finalizing the feedback that's received on Friday, which was the cutoff date that was announced earlier. And we will then also finalize the plans for the survey implementation, which I believe hopefully will keep as simple as possible. And it could be just a checklist. It's an HTML page that allows you to check boxes and then an open text area at the conclusion of each of the lifecycle phases to add additional software capabilities that weren't included in the checklist. But one of the important things I suspect, and, you know, experience has drawn us toward this in the past, is that to get the response from the community that is going to make this survey, you know, a useful endeavor, I think means that we're all going to have to try to promote it and garner the interest and attention of software providers to respond to the ontology survey. Now, clearly, that it will depend in part on the quality and convenience or ease of the survey itself. So hopefully we'll achieve that. But then secondarily, I think the track champions, for example, each may know or know of several different software providers that might have tools that would contribute these kinds of capabilities. And if they could be approached directly to participate in the survey by these champions, I think that would be quite helpful. So at that point, we'll be once the implementation of that survey is published, we'll have a few weeks to allow responses and then collect results in a very straightforward manner and publish those as well, perhaps on a wiki or something akin to that. I would see that presentation, that summarization, as something that helps someone find particular ontology evaluation capabilities in the software. It's not intended to compare software one to the other at all. I think the survey is just is a way of building and showing and maintaining an inventory of software capabilities that would support users in various ways. And so I would anticipate that that summary will be organized around software capabilities as opposed to software packages or software tools themselves. So on slide four, I've briefly stated what the ideal time schedule will be on this activity. The first bullet there refers to something that I've really already mentioned, is that I want to make sure that the candidate software capabilities that are included in the checklist survey are indeed do directly address ontology, quality, and fitness outcomes and not just the ease of building an ontology. And so as I mentioned on the outset on slide five, details about the plans for the hackathon and clinics, I think that's plural, that are anticipated downstream will be addressed by Mike Dean very shortly. And I thank you.
Okay, well, we're at the end of the track synthesis now. And I was saying that this would be a time when we would have a brief chance for discussion. What I'd like you to do is please to raise your hand if you have something to say. But what I'd like us to be talking about is not the sort of the detail, but very much about how do we carry this forward? How do we actually make something happen out of this? Okay, Fabian, you have your hand up.
Matthew, is there anything for tea?
Hello?
We can hear you. Go ahead, Fabian.
Great. I know I'm not sure whether it's a detail or not, but I think it's important enough. We have a distinction between intrinsic and extrinsic, and you explained it in his presentation, where we say intrinsic is the evaluation without having any domain knowledge or any knowledge about requirements. And then extrinsic was defined as the evaluation of behavior of the ontology in the sense of black box testing. And this is so what I'm worried about is that now we have two tracks. One is focusing on the intrinsic, and the other one is focusing on the extrinsic, very much in the sense of the looking at behavior with respect to an IT system. But the aspect of evaluating whether the stuff in the ontology is true or represents the domain accurately is kind of falling through the cracks. And as Mike said, that you know he didn't mention it too much in his presentation, but he just said in this that the interaction with the domain experts, the validation of business processes, plays a very important part of building an ontology, and that's as my experience as well. I mean the validation of the content of the ontology is an extremely important part, and that's part of the ontology validation. Now, Steve said that might be considered as part of the IT requirements, but I don't think that's a good way of looking at it, because if you look at all the biomedical ontologies, these reference ontologies are not necessarily linked to any particular IT system, and still they do a lot of validation of the content. Basically, the domain experts are looking at and reviewing the content of the ontology. So I'm just worried that it's basically this very important aspect of ontology evaluation is falling through the cracks.
Okay, thank you, Fabian. Todd? Star 7 if you're...
while Todd is trying to get online, may I suggest people who are on the call and not on the chat, please log into the chat room. There are at least like 5 or 6 of, people that haven't logged in. Sorry, Todd.
That's okay. I thought you were going to respond to Fabian. Quick response to Fabian, then I'll ask my question. Fabian, I think some of your concerns are addressed in the extrinsic valuation criteria that look at whether you are meeting your requirements, and those requirements, hopefully, and of course Amanda will provide counterexamples, have necessitated that your representation is conformant with what you're trying to do. But the question I really wanted to ask had was addressed to Leo and Steve earlier, and I didn't see a response from them. And, you know, I don't think we should get hung up about this distinction between intrinsic and extrinsic necessarily. We can spend a lot of time on that. But more importantly, based on the premise of the Ontology Summit, which was evaluation across the life cycles, where do these various types of evaluation, intrinsic, extrinsic, or in the middle or over the top, whatever, fall? That is, up front, if you're doing design and architecture, or during development phases, or during initial testing after initial development, depending on what mechanism or methodology you're using, all the way down to acceptance testing. And I don't remember hearing anything about how the particular types, the way we're classifying the evaluations and other criteria, fall in that spectrum. So that's my question. That's it. I got to go. Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Todd. Terry, you're next. Star 7? Yes, we can hear you.
I went through mine.
Okay. Leo, then.
Let me address Todd real quick, and then Fabian. Todd, we think that we haven't actually talked about the life cycle when we pose these intrinsic and extrinsic poles with the land of in between. We think that really you can apply these at every stage of the life cycle. So, for example, your first attempt at the ontology, you can prove consistency, for example, if it's formalized enough. If you revise that and maintain it, you can prove it again that it's still consistent. So some of these things, structural properties, intrinsic properties, for example, can be applied at any point in the life cycle. Extrinsic, again, can be applied if you have an application or a range of applications. You can, of course, apply that as you course through time, including after maintenance when the requirements have changed slightly. There's still a lot to say about that. Fabian did raise a important issue, and of course, we're not glossing over this. I mean, we think, in fact, that conformance to the real world is really the point of an ontology, and ways to gauge that will be things such as, you know, for example, applying a sound analysis and checking with your domain experts that the representation is sufficient for the application. So really you're talking intrinsic, extrinsic, and the land of in between in that one sentence. And it's always going to be appropriate. So during maintenance, for example, if you make changes to the ontology, you have to confirm them with your domain experts, because that's probably where the knowledge came from, but you also want to apply consistency, checks, and so forth. So we're not glossing this over. We kind of pose intrinsic and extrinsic as poles. Basically, when you define the extremes, it's easier to see what the limits are, if you will, and that the important things really fall in between. Thank you.
My point was it isn't that this is not the extremes. The one is looking at the properties of the thing itself, independent of reality and requirements. The other one is looking at the behavior of the damn thing, as part of a Maltese system. That is, these are two aspects. There is not, in between all that, is not conformance to reality. That's just a different level. So that was my point. And my point wasn't also not that you are glossing over. I'm just saying by the way we set up divided up the topics in different tracks, it seems that nobody owns that part of ontology evaluation. And I think we all agree that's an important part. So I was wondering, you know, are we forgetting something important here?
Well, yeah. So I think that, for example, when we actually stated, which speakers we thought mostly addressed, either intrinsic or the land of in between, we really thought that, it's preponderance, if you will. So a couple of the speakers mostly, addressed what we consider intrinsic, but obviously they have to address things that are only relatively intrinsic. And the two speakers, or the one speaker plus Antoclin, that really we consider the land of in-between, in effect, that they have less perhaps intrinsic characteristics according to this extreme view that we're taking. So we think that, in fact, intrinsic and extrinsic, it's probably a good idea and to consider those as extremes, because most of us will be, we might be on the intrinsic to intrinsic side of the land of in-between, as opposed to, requirements and applications of ontologies, which would be on the rightward side, the extrinsic side. So in effect, it's kind of a rhetorical device to, kind of gauge that space.
Okay, I think I'm going to need to close the discussion there. I'm sorry, there are some hands up. If you can put your comments on the chat, that would be helpful. But I think we need to continue with the agenda at this point. Thanks a lot, all of you. So we're now on to approach to the communique and a proposed communique outline. That's Amanda and Fabian.
Thank you for having me. Amanda and I are the lead editors for the communique, and we are providing an overview here, a short overview for our plans. And so I'm now on slide 2, and the idea is that for the people who haven't participated in ontology on the summit before, I'll just summarize what the communique is about. As you all know, the ontology summit tackles each year a new topic that is of interest to the ontology community, and the purpose is not just to provide a forum where people can exchange ideas, but rather to come up with a consensus position. And that consensus usually has a part where we talk about the state of the art, and then a prospective part where we talk about what we should be doing in the future. And this consensus is captured in the communique. And it should be clear from what I just said, but just to make it explicit, so that means that the communique is not a summary document. The communique is only one deliverable of many, and so there we have, for example, the wiki pages, which are maintained by the track champions, which are able to represent the discussion that we'll be having much more thoroughly than we will be able to in the communique. And, of course, the document is also not a research paper, since we are not talking about research we have done, but rather as part of it will be about what we should be doing in the future. Okay, I'll now talk about the process, how we get there. That's on page 3, that's slide 3. So how do we get there? We all participate in the Ontology Summit in various forms, panel discussions, emails, using survey, and the track champions have the role of steering the discussion and summarizing it on the wiki pages. And then the track champions work with Amanda and me to provide the first initial draft of the communique and then everybody has the opportunity to provide feedback and make a suggestion for changes. And then we come up with a second draft, and again a review phase, and then a final version. And this is different from the last years. Our goal is to finalize the whole process before the symposium. So we will present the communique during the symposium, but we won't make any changes there. So there won't be any wordsmithing here in Gaithersburg. Afterward, the communique hopefully will be endorsed by all of you, the participants, and then will be distributed to the wider community, and everybody who agrees with that will have the opportunity to endorse it as well, and then it will be disseminated to the wider community and other communities who are interested in ontology. Next slide, slide 4. This contains just the schedule with when we want to have the different drafts. And as you can see, Amanda and I are shooting for submission of the document to applied ontology on July 1st. We will see how that works out. Next slide, slide 5. So this was all about the process. Now I'll talk a little bit about the content. And I think it was Mike who mentioned that there is a huge diversity of approaches. I think we all agree about that. And the reason is because that when we talk about ontology evaluation, we're actually talking about evaluation in the different life cycle of ontology. And one of them is one important reason for ontology evaluation is that somebody has a candidate ontology and wants to know whether that ontology meets his or her requirements in his project, given the IT system that this project is using. And that to answer that question, one needs to consider many factors which go beyond the content of the ontology. For example, intellectual property rights. Or it's important to consider how large the user community is. You might, even if you have two ontologies, one is good, the other is better, but the good one has a user community which is 100 times as big as the better one, you might still go with the good one. So given that there are these many factors, Amanda and I agreed that trying to do an exhaustive approach is probably going to fail. We won't have enough resources to do it, and even if we were able to do it, we would end up with a document which would be very long, and the purpose of the communique is to communicate to other communities, so you don't want to have a 100-page document there. So we need to limit the scope somewhat for the purpose of the communique. That doesn't mean that we limit the scope of the ontology summit, but in order to come up with a reasonable document, we need to narrow it down, somewhat down. Next slide, slide 6. So, and here's our scoping proposal, and I expect that there will be disagreement with it. But we went back to our understanding what is an ontology. An ontology is a machine-interpretable and human-intelligible representation of a domain, which is typically used as part of some large IT system. So our suggestion, starting with this understanding of what an ontology is that we focus on a communique on evaluation techniques that under the following aspects, and I just go now through the list here. The first question is the domain represented appropriately? And that has two flavors. It can be domain, you can evaluate that independently from the specific requirements. So, are the factual errors in the ontology, but you can also do the evaluation with respect to the requirements. For example, is everything covered in the ontology, which I need given the requirements for my purpose? Next question is the ontology human intelligible? And is the ontology maintainable? And the last one is, does the query and reasoning capability and performance meet the requirements of the IT system? Now, the last one is really not an ontology evaluation as in itself. It's rather an evaluation of the combination of an ontology with some reasoning system. But I think it's important enough to keep here, and we shouldn't exclude it from scope. I think this basically covers what Michael Denny called the quality and the fitness for purpose of an ontology. So that's what we have in mind. Next slide. So given this scope that we propose, this is the structure we have in mind. We start with a summary and then an introduction where we cover why ontology evaluation is important and what the scope of this document is. And then the third section will be about the state of the art of ontology evaluation. And the first one is, what are the desirable characteristics of ontologies and how are they measured? Again, with respect to the scope that we just had on the other slide, so not all of the potential characteristics. And this is where track A and B will provide the main part of this answer to this question. Then the next subsection is about the best practices. What best practices should one adopt to ensure that ontologies have the desirable characteristic in A? So obviously, again, the main responsibility for this answer will lay on the shoulders of the track C, but in cooperation with track A and B, since they are going to identify the characteristics we're talking about here. And the third subsection is about tool support. So what tool support is available to support the evaluation of the characteristics and the best practices that we identified. And the last section is then about the future steps, and where we talk about what we need to address and to improve the situation of ontology evaluation and the adoption of ontology evaluation techniques by the larger community. And I think this can have, again, be on various levels. It can be theoretical, so we might need just more better understanding of some of the characteristics we are talking about or about the ways of measuring them. And it can be about the tools that are needed. So this is a section where all four tracks will provide some content. This is what we have. Amanda, do you have any comments?
Okay. I certainly have one thing that I'd like to suggest. I noticed that you have some sort of groupings of things. So that you had the list, I think it was the last slide or maybe the slide before, when you looked at some relatively high-level characteristics that ontologies should have. It reminded me of a technique that I know as net of problems, net of solutions. So if you look at what you have here, why is ontology evaluation important? Well, that's kind of something that you can treat as a problem. There are problems with ontology evaluation. What are they? And you work out what the problems are in evaluating a problem, and then you look at what the solutions are, and you build those up. And what you had was part of the net of solutions, which is that it's good if ontologies are those things. But you could use those as ways of grouping more detailed characteristics and just as easily ask, well, why is it important that they're human understandable? Why is it important? And see higher levels as well. And I think given the enormous amount that we have, I think that could be a very useful technique. Anyway, Steve, you had a...
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Just real quick point to Fabian, that if you look back at the original descriptions of the summit this year, I think we were talking about is an ontology well designed? I mean, it's just, is it put together or well engineered? And I'm concerned that in your slide number 6, you say the first thing I can see is the domain represented appropriately, but otherwise, I don't see a place where you can say, well, is this thing put together well? So I'm hoping that has a place somewhere in the communique.
Steve, I think, this is Amanda, I think that that's going to be in all of the, you know, is it put together well is a very high level and vague question. It's broken down into lots of different parts, and I think that they fit in different places in Fabian's basic clustering here.
Well, I don't see it in any of the other bullets. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, first of all, the main purpose was to narrow it down. I wanted to exclude things like, you know, what are the intellectual property rights? So that, you know, because I think that's not important, but I think that's not really, you know, ontology engineering kind of evaluation concern. The is it put together well? I'm not sure what that means. It's good if you have an ontology which is very where the domain is well specified. It is represented appropriately in the sense that everything is actually correct and it meets the requirements of the RT system. And it's well understandable, it's maintainable because it's modular, all of that is given, and it performs fine. Is that sufficient to guarantee it's put together well, or what could now be going wrong?
Well, okay, we can discuss offline perhaps. I don't want to chew up the limited time we have left.
Yeah, we really need to be talking about how we approach the summit communique.
Well, I think an important thing to emphasize is I'm trying to find where on the slides it is again, but that each of these, all of the sections are going to, but particularly the 3 and 4, the state of the art and future steps, are going to require input from the track. So there's a degree of ambiguity here that is, or not ambiguity, but under specification here that is necessary because we haven't completed this process yet. We need to see more about what factors and practices and so forth emerge out of our investigation.
Right. There's a good reason why this all of the content here has ends with a question mark, because what we try to say is what are the kinds of questions we think we should be answered by the sections in the communique. Obviously, we as editors don't provide the answers. The answers come from our traction. We just group them. Todd has a question about the life cycle. Good question. If you have a suggestion how to put it and how to capture it, I mean, what I think is that there are, and when we talk about desirable characteristics, that they are probably constant. I mean, things like these, at least it's on the very high level, like maintainability and all of that. That won't change over the life cycle, but the way you measure them might change over the life cycle. But that's a guess. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that where I see it fitting in most, in all likelihood, is in under the state of the art on slide 7, under the best practices segment. That the best practices vary over the life cycle, right? What are we talking about? Are we talking about development methodology? Are we talking about, regression testing? Are we talking about acceptance testing? These different stages in the life cycle will have corresponding. And my point was just that I think that best practice is going to include paying attention to the life cycle and paying attention to particular things we've talked about at different points, you know, at the various points in it. So that's where I would see it fitting in most.
Okay, thank you. I think it's probably time we moved on then to the hackathon and clinics. So this is over to Mike Dean and Peter Yim.
Okay. Mike, you want to get us started, possibly?
Okay. Peter, it would be best if you could present, if that's okay. Thank you.
All right. I'll present on behalf of our team. It's going to slide number 2. So the hackathon or clinic or all these activities are something new for this summit. As Fabian already mentioned, the organizing committee decided that we don't want to do wordsmithing at the symposium. And the organizers think that we should do something interesting and that we could do something that extends from the insights we have gained through the summit sessions, the discourse, and the development of the communique. And as a sort of overarching goal, we also want summit participants to collaborate. And that's why maybe collaborating intensively to create something real and useful could be good. And hence, I mean, we have come up with the hackathon and clinics activities as a possibility. And then something that comes out of that work could be demonstrated during the face-to-face symposium in May at NIST. And hopefully also be spun off later past the Ontology Summit into some meaningful projects, as previous summits have proven. So three forms of collaborative activities are being proposed now as a sort of process. The first one is what we call the hackathon, but between quotes. Most hackathons are actually face-to-face, and then we're trying to do something that's virtual. I have the definitions there, which people can look up. And then we also have two types of clinics that are being proposed, an ontology evaluation clinic, which we abbreviate to just call ontology clinic, and then an ontology-based application evaluation clinic, which we will call application clinic. So moving on to slide number 4. So what do we plan to do in our hackathon? We hope we'll get small teams, hopefully distributed and collaborating teams, although one person in a team is perfectly acceptable, but hopefully a small number of people to work very intensive, not over a longer period, but over just, let's say, a weekend, a day or two, or maybe 2 weekends. In the hackathon, we want to create something new. So create new codes, new APIs, new ontologies that are relevant to this year's theme of ontology evaluation, or at least relevant to the ontology summit. And then the teams will get to demonstrate that their product and their creation in this summit symposium. And again, we encourage the teams to continue to collaborate past the summit. So going to slide 5, I mean, there's already a whole range of ideas that are proposed. I mean, almost all these ideas with the names behind them were ideas proposed by the community. I have to thank the few people who joined us. I mean, we have already had 2 meetings, fairly long meetings actually, and then some exchange over email. And these ideas actually were developed or proposed by various people. I will not go through the details here since we're in a rush for time, but people can go back through these ideas and see what they could be. And as for the ontology clinic, what we plan to do is to evaluate ontologies or evaluate ontology tools. As far as ontologies are concerned, we could have small teams of ontology developers, and then on the one hand, and on the other side, we have the tool makers or people who are who have developed or hosting evaluation tools, and then we send the ontologies through those tools and then do some diagnostics and tell the ontology developer what's wrong with them, what could be improved, and so on. And the flip side of that is we send gold standard ontologies through those tools, study the results, diagnose problems of the tools, and see how the tools could be improved. So I think this would be good, and hopefully this exercise will help raise the state of the art. Going on to slide number 7, ontology clinic candidate projects and players included, I mean, people like Mike Bennett, who proposed we could look at the fibro ontology, Gene Holm, who had proposed several ontology, actually several lists of ontology and maybe vocabularies, lighter ontologies that is suitable for the e-government activities in her and the open government platform work or IT environments that they're trying to put together. And as for the evaluation of the tools, we could send very well developed ontologies like Buffalo, Dolce, TSL, Sumo, Psych. I mean, those are sort of fairly well known good ontologies through tools like OOPS or OQuery, and then do some diagnosis that way. We could also develop and evaluate and refine an ontology of ontology evaluation based on what has transpired in this summit and maybe possibly what was collected or what has been collected by from the tracks that would go into the survey. Going on to slide number 8. Applications, what we plan to do is to get a small team of, team of 4. On the one hand, we have ontologists and ontology evaluation tool makers or tool developers. On the other hand, we will have subject matter experts and application developers. So 4 parties, and we run a clinic exercise to help users evaluate whether ontologies that the user already had in mind is fit for the intended purpose and do evaluation that way. And whether the quality of those ontologies are satisfactory and so on, I mean, from an application's point of view. And obviously it provide appropriate recommendations. Going on to slide 9, candidate projects and players included like financial industry application, which the EDM Council in Mike Dean has volunteered, earth science application that Joanne Luciano and Peter Fox have been talking about. They're running a community called ESIP, Earth Science International Partners. Other people in this territory include the EarthQ people that Ontolog has been collaborating with not too long ago, and SOCOP folks, which has been operating on the Ontolog collaborative work environment all along. So these are all candidate projects and players. David Leo in some of the 15926 people have offered manufacturing and process industry applications that we could that could be candidate projects. And then I have a question mark, possibly maybe biomedical applications, because they are sort of fairly mature in having developed applications, and we have tons of people in that domain, although maybe not as much at this meeting or the last few meetings, but they will be showing up, I mean, in the upcoming sessions. So going on to slide 10, how are we going to do it? I mean, these are all candidates. So what we are going to do is to make a call for project proposals. And possibly, I mean, if people want to sponsor challenges, that's welcome too. What people would need to do, even if you had created suggested ideas or you have ideas to suggest, come up with meaningful projects, find your collaborating partners, and form a team, and then put together a proposal, submit the proposal before our deadline. And then after that, we will probably do some harmonization, tweak and align proposals, tweak and align teams, and then pick some of the projects that we will try to work on. And in between that time, the organizing committee, and particularly the team that has been working on the hackathon and clinics, will try to provide help and support. Going on to slide 11. So what are we looking for in a project proposal? Essentially, it's something very succinct. One page or at most two will do, but I mean, it should include the following information: a title of the project, an abstract to describe what you're going to, what you're trying to do, who are the collaborators that are involved, what's the objective and the goal of this, what is the expected deliverable or deliverables, an open-ended remarks section that you can put in whatever information is pertinent, and then provide some references, because I mean these will also be published and will be part of the useful collection of ideas that might help advance the state of the art just through the proposals. And slide number 12, our plan to execute it is we'll plan and stage carefully prior to the hackathon. The hackathon is just going to be one weekend or two weekends, but the preparation might be weeks. I mean, it's just to get us to that one weekend. We will, and when that day come or those days come, we'll create an augmented virtual work environment to support intensive collaboration. Some of the ideas that have been suggested were like voice chat, wiki, cloud storage, screen capture exchanges supported round the clock, I mean, over those 1 or 2 days. And then we give people a little time to prepare for the presentation and for software and hackathon results. It will be demos that will be run at the face-to-face. And hopefully, if we have a sponsor, we might even offer awards and have an award ceremony at the symposium. So don't limit your imagination. Come up with proposals. This is the planned timeline. I will not go into the detail as they are fairly well spelled out. I mean, there are various deadlines. The announcement and call for a proposal has already been made just now, I mean, a few slides ago, and the rest would be the timelines that we're trying to work against. So that's all I have. I want to thank all these people on slide 14 who had contributed the ideas. So slide 15, That would be it. And back, Mike, do you have anything to add? Mike Dean.
No, Peter, I thought that was great, and thanks for presenting.
Okay, back to Matthew.
Okay, are there any questions or comments about the hackathon? Apparently not, in which case we'll move on to our summary wrap-up and announcements. Peter, I think this was your item.
Oh, well, I don't have anything more specific. I think
okay.
We have already got an overload of data.
Okay, well, in that case, it just remains for me to thank all of our speakers today and everyone that's contributed to discussions, both verbally and on the chat, and look forward to your continuing contributions in the weeks to come. Thank you all very much, and good day.
And join us again next week for session number 7. Okay.
Thank you all. Bye.
Bye-bye.